It's time for the Phenology Show. And for all of you campers out there, we're going to start off this morning with a quick botanical description of poison ivy. Leaves of three, let it be. That's going to cut out about 30% of the plants out there, but one of those is poison ivy. Poison ivy is really pretty easy to identify. And at this latitude, and so far, and I'm knocking on some of the wood trim around the windows here, it remains in this area simply in the fall and winter. It's going to be about a 12-inch high woody stick, and it's going to have big leaf scars, big D-shaped leaf scars on it. But that won't help you identify it this time of year. This time of year, leaves of three, absolutely. But if you look carefully, you will see that the two lateral leaves off of the stem have no petiole. That is, they start right at the stem. Two leaves coming off the sides. And the third leaf, there is a petiole of some half to three quarters to maybe 1 inch before the leaf starts. So you've got three leaves, two of which are stuck right to the stem of the plant, and a third one which has about a three-quarter inch gap between the other two leaves and the third leaf. Now, that sort of gets you down to the three leaves. So you're looking at the three leaves. Look at the outside border of the leaf, and poison ivy is described as being irregularly dentate. That simply means that it has some teeth on it from time to time. Not every leaf has teeth, but most do. And usually in a collection of the three leaves, you will see some teeth on one of the leaf. Now, sometimes the leaves are all on, or the teeth are on one side of the leaf. Sometimes there are teeth on both sides. Sometimes the teeth are fairly large, other times fairly small. The one thing to remember is they are not regular. So if you look at a strawberry plant, for example, the strawberry leaf is leaves of three. But if you look at the edge of the strawberry leaf, it is a series of teeth that starts right where the leaf connects to the plant and continues evenly all the way up one side and all the way down the other. Looks like a saw. It's a really regular. That's not poison ivy. Poison ivy, you might see half of a leaf that has somewhat of a regular toothed appearance, but the other half won't look like that half. Both sides of the leaf are seldom identical. In the case of the strawberry leaf, you could fold it in half and the two sides would probably match up pretty well. That's not going to happen on a poison ivy plant. Now, I don't recommend folding poison ivy leaves in half unless you're wearing rubber gloves, but I suppose you could try that. The plants like trilliums and nodding trilliums, large flowered trilliums, Jack in the Pulpit, all three of those have leaves of three, but none of them have that irregular dentation that you find on poison ivy. Now back to the stick that I was talking about to begin with. If you live south of Grand Rapids or even west of Grand Rapids, over in the Pequot Lakes area, for example, poison ivy can be a vining plant that actually climbs up the trunk of a tree. It doesn't do that here, but I've seen it in Pequot Lakes, right in the school grounds there. There's a big Norway pine with poison ivy climbing right up the trunk. I turkey hunt down in the southern part of the state, and poison ivy down there can be shrubbery. It can be tall, woody-stemmed plants that look like, maybe red osier dogwood or some other woody plant that grows in a kind of a shrub-like structure. We do not have that this part of the state yet, but it may come as the temperatures warm. It may be that we will have that sort of poison ivy growth here. But for now, and for this season, if you're out camping and you see three leaves and they're irregularly dentate, just give it a wide berth. And really, only half of us are susceptible to the oil of the poison ivy plant. But if you're in that half, you aren't going to want to be near that stuff at all. Now, it is an oil. It does get on your skin. If you've got poison ivy and it's gone to the blister stage, the liquid that leaks out of those blisters is not infectious. That's not poison ivy. It's the oil that gets on your skin that the skin reacts to. And that oil can be washed off with rubbing alcohol. So if I find myself in a patch of poison ivy and I'm wearing shorts or I've just got my hands in it, I have about 4 hours in which to clean that oil off of my skin. And I use alcohol, rubbing alcohol. I pour it onto a wash rag until the rag is very wet. Not quite like full of water, but certainly a lot of alcohol in there. And then I wash the offended areas and get that oil off of my skin. You can do the same thing with Fels naphtha soap. You could probably do it with some of the other soaps, but you've got to get that oil off your skin once you've come in contact with it. Or, you know, within probably 12 to 15 hours, you're going to have dermatitis. You're going to have that itchy, blistery rash that nobody really wants. That's poison ivy. That's just probably the biggest thing you need to fear as a camper. If you are out camping right now, and if you're along a lakeshore or a stream or even just along some wetlands, you should go out and look for the spotted touch-me-not or the jewelweed. It's same plant. It's an impatience. It has a bright orangey or orangey red trumpet shaped flower that's shaped like a fish hook. So you've got this big bell. Think of a trumpet. You got a big bell at one end and then it narrows down and then it hooks back underneath like the letter J laid on its side. So that flower is just now coming out on the spotted touch me not. The interesting thing about touch-me-not and the reason it's called touch-me-not is that the seed pods that form on that plant are explosive. And I don't mean like blow your fingers off, but I mean like if you touch them when they're ripe, they're going to roll up really quickly. The sides are going to roll up very quickly and the seeds are going to get thrown about in the underbrush and you will be planting more touch-me-not. That stuff it's an annual, so it depends on that seed propagation to get started again for next year. And if you're out camping with some kids and you find these plants, they're going to be quite succulent. They're going to have it's a hollow stem, but it's almost translucent when you look at it. And if you break the plant off and rub that juice from that stem on your insect bites or poison ivy, it will relieve the itching. It's a bit like aloe in that it has kind of a soothing effect on itching. And so that is an interesting plant to look for. I have been watching it. It has just begun to flower with these big trumpet-shaped orange flowers. They've just come out. But if you look carefully and if you kind of go through the clump of them, you may find some fully developed seed pods on there already. And that is because the touch-me-not not only covers it's covering its bets by producing a flower that is clistogamous. And clistogamous means closed marriage. It simply means that it's self-pollinating. So it is reproducing itself in a seed pod that is only the genetic material of that plant. Those seeds tend to be not as robust. They produce a plant that is not as strong as the original, as one that would be crossbred. And I'll explain how that works in just a moment, but I want to cover this clistogamous flower first. They occur, and these seed pods can be generated. There can be seed pods on the plants right now, even before the plant has begun to flower. Now, once it begins to flower, that orange trumpet-shaped flower is held by a little thin thread of material that holds it to the plant. And the nectar is at the back of that hook at the bottom. Think of a fish hook with the hook pointing toward the ground. the hummingbird comes up there and she puts her beak in the flower. And then when it's in as deep as she can push her beak, she sticks her tongue out and it goes around that hook and down to the very end where the nectar is, where the sweet nectar is. And that in doing that, the plant, which is suspended in the middle sort of by this little thread, the plant gently leans down and puts a dab of pollen on the forehead of the hummingbird. And the hummingbird flies off to the next plant, and those flowers, those same flowers, they start off as male and they produce pollen, and then they become female, the same flower. And when it develops its female parts, then if the hummingbird comes in having just visited a male flower of the spotted touch-me-not, comes into this new flower, sticks its beak in there, runs its tongue around, and this little gentle thread kind of tips the flower down, bumps onto the hummingbird's forehead. If there's pollen there, it will pollinate the flower. And then you get an even bigger and much more robust cross-pollination for the jewelweed, which creates a much stronger plant. But these things grow in clusters, and they're always near water. They're going to be in a ditch somewhere, a low spot on your property that maybe collects water when it really rains. This is where you're going to find them. The other interesting thing about this plant is if you find spotted touch-me-not, jewelweed, and you're not sure, take a leaf and hold it underwater. And if you get it underwater, submerged, and get it just in the right perspective, the whole leaf will look as though it's plated in silver. And the reason for that is that the leaf is covered with microscopic hairs and it doesn't get wet. So the water isn't actually touching the surface of the leaf. And when you get it wet like that and you do it just right, you're actually looking at light reflecting off that barrier, that boundary of water that shines back silver. So if you're thinking that you found spotted touch-me-not, hold the leaf underwater. If it shines back silver, you have the right plant. And the sap from that plant is a palliative for itching. And the seeds are remarkable. And the seed pods, of course, if you're out camping and you've got some little kids with you, show them the patch, show them the seed pod, and turn them loose and let them have at it. And they'll spend an hour having a great time out there. I'm going to very quickly go through some other things that are happening. I've taken up enough of your morning already, and you're thinking about calling in and pledging, and we want to hear from you doing that. So don't forget to take care of that. But while you're driving around today, the sunflowers that you see are likely the giant sunflowers, and the difference between those and the sawtooth sunflower is that the sawtooth sunflower has a smooth stem and the giant sunflower has a hairy stem. So if it's important to you to know the difference, that's how you tell. Joe pieweed just began to bloom. Swamp milkweed and common milkweed are both blooming profusely, probably at their peak. The northern holly plant has berries that are beginning to develop. Red osier dogwood has both flowers and seeds. Red osier dogwood, of all of the dogwoods, red osier is the one that flowers indeterminately. So it flowers right through the summer. It'll be flowering now. It'll flower in September. And there'll be seeds sitting right next to it on flowers that bloomed in May. And that will help to identify the red osier dogwood. Also, I found my first aster in bloom this past week. And I believe that it is the smooth aster. But that one and the purple aster are pretty similar. And sometimes I get them mixed up. But this is a blue flower. It's an aster, so it's kind of like a miniature sunflower, about an inch across, and blue rays on this one with a yellow center. I was walking through the woods. Well, the Newstalks mentioned that they had seen monarch butterflies, not many caterpillars, but lots of butterflies. I have seen several monarch butterflies this past week myself, but not in the numbers that I would have expected. And finally, a northern pearly eye butterfly flying through the woods by itself, sort of just trucking along, having its own fine time. I'm following it and trying to look at it. And all of a sudden, it comes across a second northern pearly eye. And the two of them get into a chase flight thing. and they're never separated by more than 6 or 8 inches. And they're flying these tight circles, like an 8 or 12 inch circle. And they're whipping around in these circles, and they're flying through the woods and around trees and back and forth and up and down. And I suspect that it was courtship. It may have been male-female. It may have been two males. It may have been two females. I don't know. But there was enough activity there to suggest to me that these butterflies were involved in something more than just defensive territory. So that's our phenology show for today. Many of you are up here in the country, in the North Country, doing a little camping, and this is a listener-supported radio service. Every week, I come on and tell you what to look for and why you should be interested in it. It's called Phenology, and I have been doing it for over 40 years. I love it, and I enjoy every moment of it, and I know that you who are exposed to it appreciate it as well. And if you're just brand new to it, and it's all been a brand new experience this morning, welcome. And here's to more exploring in the North Country. And while you're here, pledge your support to our radio service, KAXE.org. You can go to the word donate and pledge online, or you can call 326-1234, that's area code 218, and pledge your support right now this morning. We're waiting to hear from you. Thanks.
Pledges coming in online at KAXE.org. A really easy way to do this is text the word donate to 218-326-1234. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Each Tuesday morning, I learn something. Have you? Did you learn something today? That's a great reason to pledge your support.